everyone, and welcome to another episode of Horror Homeroom Conversations. I'm Elizabeth Irwin.
I'm Gwen Hoffman.
I'm Dawn Peatley.
And on today's episode, it's Creepy Kids meets Art House Violence with 1976's Alice, Sweet Alice. Arguably more giallo than classic slasher, this film merges religious iconography with straight-up taboo to reflect a specifically 1970s horror sensibility. But despite a rabid cult fan base, this movie has never quite ascended to the well-known heights of other slashers of the era. But why? We're breaking it all down today on today's episode, so stay tuned.
I'll just give you a very brief description of the first part of the plot, at least. It's a very complicated film. In 1961, a divorced Catholic couple's life is turned upside down when one of their two adolescent daughters is suspected of her younger sister's brutal murder during her first communion. And then there's a whole series of subsequent stabbings. By whom? Well, we'll spoil that for you. And the younger sibling who is stabbed that sort of kicks the plot off is actually Brooke Shields in one of her very first roles, I think. Yes, it is her first film role.
Yeah, what was she, a Jordache girl after that or something like that? And then I know she did The Blue Lagoon. Oh, that was bad too.
That was
yeah.
really bad. There was also Endless Summer. That was a good one. In terms of being really bad. So what did everybody think about this? I am dying to hear your assessment of Alice, Sweet Alice.
I feel like we should let Dawn go first because she had not yet seen this before. So I'm curious to see what her assessment is.
As I mentioned before we started, I guess I wasn't a huge fan when I was watching it. Though I have to say, when I thought about it afterwards, and when you think about it like in the context of other films, it gets more interesting. But I guess I thought the plot was a little bit kind of all over the place and incoherent. You're led to one suspect and then another. And actually, the bottom line is I never really got over, like, I thought Alice, Sweet Alice, was doing the killing. Like, I thought she was the killer. And I'm not sure I ever got over my disappointment to discover that she wasn't, so.
I don't know. I think that I enjoy it. I mean, it's definitely a 70s low-budget film, and it doesn't necessarily give you all of the gratuitous gore or, you know, it does touch on taboo, but not as much as most of your 70s films. But I think I liked the way that it played with ideas of children and childhood and beliefs of inherent innocence. Because as you said, I think you're immediately led to just wholeheartedly believe that this child is not innocent. And it's in the court of a church that you're led to believe she's just a bad seed. And you've already mentioned that she kind of, it rips off a lot from the bad seed. And so it takes you away from this inherent innocence of children. And then it plays with that. And you see a lot of discussion that we'll get into a little bit later on about the dynamics between adults and children that I think I just enjoyed from the film. So
Liz, what did you think? Because you like it, right?
I love this movie. And I think it's one of those films that people in the horror community just don't talk about enough, because I think it gets pretty much everything right. There's this overarching ickiness to it that is just super appealing to me, and it's what I enjoy about horror. And it gets all these little details right. So you have a killer whose motivation is actually a real motivation and makes sense within the bigger narrative, which I really like. There's the leveraging of taboos that you talked about, Gwen, and I think the way those taboos are used, it really engages the viewer, but also challenges the viewer, which I think is like a specifically 1970s horror thing that happens, which I enjoy. I love the cinematography. It's gritty, but it's also stylized. And I know you didn't like the misdirection, Dawn, but I don't know. I really enjoyed the fact that there is like these levels of misdirection and you think you know what's happening. And while I'm always down for killer kids and I enjoy killer kids, I thought that for this film, the misdirection works really well to kind of like tie into some of the stuff that Gwen was talking about in terms of adolescence and taboo. So it's a super incredibly uncomfortable film, but I kind of think that's the point. So I am enthusiastically in favor of it. It sounds like we're all at like sort of different stages with this movie.
And I think that something we're going to have to talk about at some point will be that ending, because then it begs to question, do we make killers out of kids? So that's just something, while it's actually in my head and before my such and such age brain forgets.
So you're kind of expecting us to remember that you said that?
No, but at least I can say I said it.
Well, maybe not to focus like on the very, very ending, because we've got it. There is a very interesting scene where, obviously the film makes you think all for a little while that it's Alice, tells you that it's not, but then Alice is brought back at the end as a possible future killer, given everything she's just gone through. But Liz, you said you thought the killer's motives were good. That was one thing that I wasn't a fan of. Okay, it was this Mrs. Trudoni who committed the murders. She was like, what, the housekeeper for the priest or something? I guess I was just surprised that it was her. And it's like, I wish I had known more about her. Like, I didn't know anything about her character, like why she would possibly be even considered a murder suspect. But then all of a sudden, like, boom, oh, she's been the one killing people because they're sinning. They're sinful. She's sort of like a religious morality killer.
But it ties into the loss of her own child when she wasn't, quote unquote, being moral. And that's what I liked about it. Okay. Because everybody get ready to drink because we're going to start this early. But the trauma. The trauma of losing a child, I think, is something that makes sense narratively. But it's more how the film uses her particular character. So in the 1970s, especially, I think it's fair to say that you saw a lot of horror films that grapple with religion and the iconography and all of those things. But most of the films tend to come at it from the devil or like a possession.
Yeah.
Whereas with this film and Mrs. Trelawney, she's literally like a representation of the church. And her killing is coming out of sort of this perversion of religion, which I think makes this film a more serious indictment of religion on the whole than a lot of other 70s films that people usually cite when it comes to religion.
I agree, because I was wondering, what does the film in itself say about religion and repression?
Yeah.
So you have like the whole idea, you had Robin Wood writing about things at this time and writing a lot about horror and repression. But you also have to remember, so it's kind of situated just after or amongst the counterculture. So you have these unruly or this unruly child coming up that would be easy to write her off as the bad guy, given what was going on at the time period. But it seems like the bad guy is more the institutionalized, the perversion of the religion that you're talking about, too.
Yeah. And the way it explicitly ties it to religion, too, because a lot of times other films, they'll bring like the priest into, say, the family home, for example. Whereas here, it's literally the site of a church where there's so much murder. And that one scene where the priest gets killed, and it is brutal and gloriously bloody and very almost like giallo, I think is doing something a little bit different in terms of the religion and also the monster's motivation that maybe other religious films aren't doing.
Yeah, I think you're right. They went out of their way to situate the scene in the church in the pretty much the beginning, the middle, and the end. And then even if they're not in the church, you did have Mrs. Trudoni or whatever. She was with the priest whom she was the primary caretaker for. So they just continuously will just bring religion to the forefront. And again, of course, you have the whole thing happening at the confirmation.
Yeah, so what you're saying is like in the whole notion of perversion of religion, I mean, the one quote that I wrote down that seemed very important, children pay for the sins of their parents. So Mrs. Trudoni she killed the girl at the very beginning because her parents were sinning and were divorced. So she's like a figure of the church and becomes monstrous because of that, rather than say like The Exorcist, which is maybe the obvious sort of other 70s example. where you have the monstrous and then the church is what swoops in and saves everyone. But here, kind of the perversion of the church's ideology is kind of what the monstrous thing is.
I think so, because it kind of pushes back on the whole idea of original sin, right? So you have the person killing because she doesn't want the children to inherit the evil of the so-called immoral parents. And there's something really interesting about how that connects up to the Catholicism in the movie specifically. And I'm thinking of original sin and how it's like a direct frontal attack on that, as opposed to invoking the devil or doing a possession narrative, which like creates a little bit more distance. This is directly challenging theology, and it's also directly doing it in a church. And so it feels more transgressive because of that.
I think you bring up a good point about original sin too, because the first girl had to be killed before she received her first communion. So she wasn't officially, she hadn't undergone confirmation. So that makes sense. It's like it was a pressing issue to get it before that.
That brings up something else too that I was thinking about like in rewatching this film, is that it's kind of an issue horror film, right? I mean, you have the indictment of Catholicism, you've got emotional child neglect. You got some adult perverts running around, and you kind of also see the disintegration of like the nuclear family. But at least to me, this never feels like an issue movie, unlike some other horror films. Do you guys have ideas about why that might be?
No, but I think you just made me realize that the pervert is not the biggest issue in the film.
Wait, who is the pervert exactly?
The landlord.
Oh, okay. Alfonso.
Yeah, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
God, they couldn't have gone out of their way to make him look more grotesque. And he's not the horror. I mean, he pushes her against the wall and like tries to like lick her, and he covered in grease. And
but the way the film does use fatness to kind of convey that disgust is, it's not good, you guys. It's not good.
Yeah.
Or cats.
Or cats, yeah.
There's nothing wrong with being a cat person. Do you think they really hurt a cat in that film? That had me a little bit upset.
No, dude, that was totally a stuffed animal.
That was really well filmed, but I was super upset. That was the only part I was super upset.
Oh, no. Do you think it really was a cat?
I really hope not. I doubt it. But it made me
actually,
second-guess things.
I remember thinking that, too, when I watched it. But again, 70s.
Oh, yeah.
The era of cannibal Holocaust.
Oh, dear.
True. I found myself clutching my pearls, Liz. I did.
Well, that's more upsetting and troubling than anything in this film, to be honest with you. Lord.
So you're not quite as worried about perversion of Catholicism now. It's like, but wait, they heard a cat.
I wasn't raised Catholic, so it's easy for me to. I'm like, okay. It's all good. So do you guys have thoughts about like why this doesn't seem like an issue movie, or does it seem like an issue movie to you?
Well, it doesn't seem like an issue movie to Gwen, obviously. I don't think any of those early 70s horror movies, as much as people have read so much politics into things like Last House on the Left and The Hills Have Eyes, and they are political in retrospect, but I don't think they offer like a coherent political ideology in any sense. I think there's just something about the kind of weirdness of the film that tends to disarm any kind of like cohesive political message for me. It's almost like it kind of goes from weird set piece to weird set piece. And I guess I'm just grappling with the weirdness of it most of the time I'm watching it, rather than, and you know, like the grotesquery of it and just the what's going on here of it. Yeah, it's not any kind of seamless political film.
Do you think that it was just aiming more to just
shock,
push boundaries? Yeah,
and I was going to say,
so they really did go for taboos. I mean,
yes.
They hit sex, they hit, you know, child pornography, or, you know, perversion, I'm sorry, they hit religion, they hit cat killing, they hit, I mean, you name it, they kind of hit it. The only thing they didn't hit is cannibalism. I mean,
that's true.
That's the sequel.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I looked at Wikipedia, and the director was a porn director previously. So,
oh, well, there you go.
It kind of makes sense. And it sticks out to me that I thought was so, like, 1970s and so overtly of the time was in the detective office. There's all of these nude pinup calendars. And the first time I was watching out, I like had to freeze frame because I was like, wait a minute, like, am I really seeing this? And it's never remarked upon. It's just sort of there. And I guess, you know, in the 70s, film was a little seedier. And it just really struck me as somebody watching it in 2021 to just see all those nude pinup models.
It just reminds me of things, though. I remember having discussions with my parents, and I remember my parents telling me things like, when, you know, if you were applying to become something like a flight attendant in certain decades, they could ask you to pretty much disrobe. And that was part of your application process. So it was a very whacked out different time.
Yeah.
But I don't know that the film is aware of the way that it connects its sort of narrative on sexuality, because you have that's in this detective space, which is coded as exclusively masculine, right? It's just men within the room. And it's just so commonplace to see nude bodies. And then you compare that against the way the kids are talked about in the film. And there's one comment where that one of the detectives says, oh, she's a weird little kid. And then literally in the next breath, talks about her body and her breasts. And there's just this weird linking of adolescent female sexuality with grown-ass men being creepy as hell.
But there was almost like a Madonna whore thing going through the whole entire thing. Because if you look at the comparison of the two sisters, I mean, the one is always wearing white. The one is always playing with dolls. The one is always so much more preferred and juvenile and innocent. And then the other one that covets all of those things, never gets those things, is the one that has those constant comments, like the one by the police officer. And I remember the mother on almost three occasions saying something to the effect of, I just don't understand you, to the one daughter. So there's definitely a weird parallel going on. And it's more so specifically with that daughter.
It's just kind of weird why Mrs. Trelawney doesn't kill her. Like, why she doesn't kill Alice and kills the innocent, pure one. But maybe that's the point, right? That she has to, in a sense, like, sacrifice the innocent child for the sins of her parents. And maybe it's a sign that Alice is already transgressive, that she's allowed to live. But yeah, she's not innocent. And she looks kind of grotesque. And I don't even know why, but at the end of the film, when she's sort of, she's pretending to go through communion or get confirmed or whatever. I'm not Catholic either. there's just something that seems wrong about it. Like, isn't she just evilly sort of looking from under her veil in this sort of threatening, sinister way?
See, I almost saw it too as almost sexualized at that moment.
Yeah.
She just, very different in portrayal than some the people that had received communion before her. She just seemed to be there, lips agape in front of her male person. It was just, and I think it's because they did set such a stage for her to be so sexualized throughout the whole film.
Yeah.
That maybe that's why my mind went there. And I feel like that was probably purposeful.
Oh, yeah. And she was 12. It's crazy how much they were sexualizing her. I mean, I guess you're right. That's one of the ways in which this film really sort of crosses taboos. I don't think she's even a teenager. But she really reminded me, and this is, I guess, to go back to what I said earlier, like, she really reminded me of Rhoda from The Bad Seed. And I think, you know, Rhoda's really young, too, I think prepubescent. And she kind of gets sexualized surprisingly much, given that that film was from the 50s, especially in her interactions with the handyman who lives down in the basement, who she sets on fire. The way that Alice was collecting things in that chest down in the basement or wherever it was she was keeping it. I mean, that's what Rhoda did, like, you know, killed people for their trinkets and saved them all. I guess that's probably a purposeful and pretty good misdirection on the part of the director it certainly set me up to think, oh, Alice is like Rhoda. She's killing people. She killed her sister to get her veil. And then I think, for me, one of the most brilliant things about this film is how they managed to hide the size of the killer. The killer's always shot from these angles, like above or below, some way where you can't tell exactly how tall they are or how big they are.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good parallel between Bad Seed and Alice, because you're right. They're also both very almost dominant in their personalities. Because I remember when Alice goes knocking on the landlord's door with her group of people or whatever, almost taunting him. Very manipulative, very assertive, very in his face. And she almost seemed on par with him, like matching wits with him at that moment, which then made her seem even more adult. And that's very much like how Rhoda was too. And then I think that draws the larger difference between her and her sister again too, and maybe why it was easier for people to embrace her as a killer, because again, that's something that you didn't normally do in horror films at that time. I mean, you really didn't have a lot of kind of inherently bad children up until that point.
Yeah, really, virtually none other than Rhoda.
Yeah, everybody else was possessed.
But you said, Dawn, you didn't like the misdirection part of it.
I think in retrospect, I think it was pretty good. While I was watching the film, I was just confused. And I was disappointed that it wasn't Alice. It seemed like a big buildup to me to, that the film was suggesting that it was her. And I thought that would have been pretty transgressive. And then Mrs. Trelawney just came out of left field for me. Like, I had not been paying attention to her throughout the course of the film. She was just like, oh, she's the housekeeper. And it always bothers me when a film unveils the killer as someone that you've not been paying any attention to. It feels like a cheap shot or something.
Scooby-Doo.
It's like, yeah, you're just pulling a killer out of thin air. Like, there's nothing in the film that led me in the least to suspect Mrs. Trelawney. Like, there should have been clues at least.
I'm
Maybe I missed
curious
them.
to see if I we may never know what the intention was in that. Like, were they forced into that because you can't have like a small child killer out of nowhere? Or was it to say, hey, you thought that this young child was going to be the bad guy. You think that these types of kids are bad. But actually, it's your religious lady. I don't know.
There's
We'll never know.
also maybe a connection too between Mrs. Trelawney, what Mrs. Tay, and our illustrious Alice, because Mrs. Tay starts because she's suffered this loss, right? And Alice now has suffered a similar loss with the death of her father. And so I wonder if, especially toward the end, if it's setting up the implication that this is going to be replicated by a new generation, that as, the breakdown of these families continue, this is going to be the natural consequence. And in a way, it almost feels very, like a very surprisingly moralistic ending, because the parents and the people who've trespassed against, quote unquote, social convention are the ones that are going to suffer the losses.
Part of me wonders, so was Alice's mom hooking up with the priest?
I don't think it was quite Thornbirds, but I think you're getting inklings of it.
Because I'm wondering if that's also what got Mrs. T and her pierogies all wound up. Got her pot boiling.
That would do it.
Because I think that seemed to keep her really motivated towards that family also, because she was mad at mom. Boy, oh boy.
So why did Mrs. Trelawney kill the priest? Can someone answer me that?
Maybe for stepping out with a divorcee? Because, well, and I don't know how religious their religion was at the time too, because I know that some priests aren't really supposed to engage in that. They're not.
Well, Catholic priests are never supposed to. I'm not Catholic, but I know that much.
I was gonna say, I don't know. I was raised Episcopalian, and it's like Catholic light, but our priests are allowed to marry. I don't know. It's like Catholic without the guilt.
No, Catholic priests, that's a no-no. Yeah, definitely the combination of Catholicism, sexuality, and children all sort of woven together makes virtually every scene kind of creepy. I mean, what do you make of the ending when Alice just doesn't she sort of walk out of there with a bloody knife, puts it in her bag? I think that's really interesting because, Alice kind of disappears for big chunks of the film. though, you know, you think she might be the killer, but Alice as a character sort of vanishes here and there. And then she's centered at the end. I mean, I guess I just saw her as being released into the world on some murderous rampage that actually won't have the sort of moral message that Mrs. Trelawney did. I mean, you know, Mrs. Trelawney was kind of steeped in, I have a moral vision for my killing. You just get the sense that Alice is just going to go out there and wield her knife wherever. There needs to be a sequel.
It's almost like it was an absolution of guilt for the viewer, because you had spent the whole time making an assumption that this is a terrible kid. And then when you had your Scooby-Doo moment, you're like, oh, damn it. I put that on the kid. And then you're like, oh, no, it's okay, because she really is kind of bad.
Yeah, it really is the kid.
I think the aunt probably needs to watch out or sleep with one eye open, because that was my sort of takeaway. Is I'm like, yeah, she's going to start murdering. And I think the first person on her hit list is going to be that aunt. And I can't entirely blame her. So,
yeah.
Do you get the sense that Alice was already bad? Or do you get the sense that they made her bad? Because I feel like she was bad. Because
I thought they made her bad.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I mean,
we're having a nature nurture discussion here.
Only because, you know, you see how neglectful her parents actually are in pretty much every context. And even when things come to a head and she's sort of institutionalized for a minute, it's still clear that they're not really being there for her in a way that is, I mean, look at her face. She's totally disagreed.
Parenting wasn't held to the same standards back in the 70s. I mean, I'm not sure neglectful parents were a thing. Like, you just let your kids go off and do their thing.
That's very true.
I agree. I was going to say, I didn't find them that neglectful given the standards of even current day. I don't know. I mean, did they seem to prefer the other child? Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
But I don't think they overtly neglected her. She was sheltered, clothed, fed, warm, all that, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
But not the emotional needs. And the emotional needs are kind
of,
like,
but that's what raises these millennials. Sorry, guys. you give everybody a friggin' trophy and then nobody shows up to work. Come on.
Yeah, but they so privileged the other daughter over her. That I think any rational person would be like, what the hell, man? You know, and perhaps if you already have an inkling to go that way, it's just something that gets then magnified.
Maybe it was cautioning parents from actually letting your kids know that you favor one over the other.
Or getting divorced and then, you know, sleeping. Yeah, like it just seems weirdly conservative for like all the batshit craziness that happens in the film, you know?
I tend to feel though that there's something, I mean, and this is one of the questions that always gets asked in these bad kid movies, right? Because parents end up favoring the good kid over the bad kid, and usually they end up like they're right. There's a reason, because one of the kids is a sort of bad seed. And I guess I'm with Gwen on thinking that there's just something off about Alice from the beginning. And that's why the parents respond more to the younger kid.
I mean, she's quirky. Yeah. But I don't know that we see anything. Okay. Yes. She does collect things much like a serial killer would in her little lair. I will grant you that. But I still feel like the film is almost saying like she's made, because when you live under the oppressiveness of people thinking that you're one thing, especially as your brain is still developing, I don't think it's too far of a stretch to say you might start to become that thing, just because that is literally the expectation of everyone around you, especially when you have your aunt being like, yo, this kid is trying to kill me, and nobody's believing her, and they're putting her in an institution, and then they're sexualizing her, and it's a lot for a 12-year-old man.
I mean, I can't disagree with you, because what you're saying is agreeing with every horror scholar pretty much up until that point and shortly after. So, I mean, there's something to it. There's something to it.
Is there a difference? Because you guys brought up the bad seed. Is there a difference with something like The Good Son, where it's a boy? Is there like a different way that like child monstrosity gets centered than in these films that are so explicitly about girls and their developing bodies? And
so statistically speaking, you're much more likely to have a son try to kill you or kill somebody else, you know, at a younger age. I mean, that's just what the stats really say. But then I think that you're on point when you bring up the sexualization of her, because anytime we have a female killer, there's something sexual going on, a female child killer. So even if you look at Orphan, if you look at Bad Seed, if you look at, you know, Alice, Sweet Alice, if you look at, and it's not even, I mean, Carrie's much older, but anytime you seem to have these female child killers, it's all linked to puberty, coming of age, sexuality. So I think that by the time you did have Good Seed, they were finally, or a bad, I'm sorry, Good Son.
Good Son.
They were finally getting on par with like actual statistics.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, and you can throw Reagan from The Exorcist in there too. Whenever there's some sort of demonic or evil girl, I feel like she is always sexualized. Whereas from what I remember of The Good Son, Macaulay Culkin, I mean, his badness, his evil is not about sex at all. It's sort of pure psychopathy, pure evil.
Yeah, and I think it continues on, like even in things like Children of the Corn. So that would be 80s. You see the same type of boy. And then, you know, there's that vacuum for a bit. There's not as many child killers. But then in the 2000s, you have Joshua and Whisper, and they're both pretty inherently bad.
And not sexualized.
Yeah.
And yet look at Orphan. That's the one where like some 30-year-old woman is inhabiting the child's body. I mean, that's like...
And propositions her father.
Yes.
A heck of an electric complex, man.
I just wonder why that is. Why women can't be evil without being sexualized at the same time. Why, especially children. It just seems so bound together. And it really is with Alice in this film.
Which is consistent. I mean, think about from the moment, at least in American history, that you have female politicians coming onto the scene. What's the first thing everybody says? Oh, she'll hit the button when she's on her period.
Yeah.
You know, we do it everywhere.
So in terms of this being like a slasher film, what do you guys think? Do you come down on the side of like, yeah, this is obviously a slasher, or because I think it's more giallo, because you get these really spectacular blood shots that just like luxuriate in the redness of it all. You know what I mean?
I like how you said something that sounds like jello and then shots in the same.
I wish I was clever enough, but that was accidental. I didn't see it as a slasher necessarily.
It doesn't feel like a slasher to me, but it kind of is. Like there's a killer on the loose with a knife stabbing people. So, I mean, given that that's what the plot's about, why doesn't it feel like a slasher? Maybe it's because the motive is so complex. I mean, Liz, you said you liked the motive of Mrs. Trelawney, that she had one, that it was sort of psychologically grounded and believable, you know, and bound up with her own belief. That's not a slasher motive. I mean, I can see it as a giallo motive, but not really a slasher motive. I mean, slasher killers don't really have motives, or they're just enacting some very concrete kind of early trauma. I don't know. Her motive seems too complex for me. I guess that's, if I were to put my finger on why it doesn't feel like a slasher, that's why.
What year did Alice, Sweet Alice come out? That was before Halloween, 2 years before Halloween.
Yeah, 76, I think.
So it was kind of before people were wholeheartedly even talking about slashers. I mean, I know that we've already talked about Black Christmas being one of the originals.
I mean, look at the killer in Black Christmas. We know virtually nothing about the killer there. No, I guess it's the fact that we sort of see Mrs. Trelawney quite a lot during the film. And slashers are usually kept off screen, like Billy in Black Christmas.
You're right. So now I'm just thinking of something. And you don't have the point of view shots. You don't.
Yeah.
But so do you think that there's something to be said about Mrs. T and Alice, and the fact that Alice is so sexualized and Mrs. T is probably past childbearing years and lost a child? So now you have this weird dynamic going on, too, between the two of them.
Like mother-child kind of dynamic?
Could be, because theoretically, we could even see it as Mrs. T giving rise to Alice as a killer. So it's there could be some kind of passage of the baton there.
I really like that. That's a really interesting idea because, you know, Mrs. Trelawney's daughter died and it's almost like Alice is her spiritual daughter. Except I think, like, I really do believe, like, her spiritual daughter is going to be bereft of the whole Christian Catholic moral motive for killing. Like, I just think Alice, like you said, Liz, is going to go after her aunt because her aunt doesn't like her.
I almost think of Alice being out there with the veil killing just because she really wanted that veil. So yeah. Maybe that can bring it, loop it back into the religion for her.
That's true. Except she doesn't seem to want the veil for what the veil symbolizes. She just thinks it's pretty. You know, it's just like one of her pretty trinkets. I mean, I really do think the film is trying to show a kind of generational thing from the older devout Catholic to the younger sort of more materialistic shallow child of the 70s.
Yeah, she definitely does covet a lot, and she covets a lot of things that she's probably been told were representations of, you know, what is good and right and just,
but without understanding what that means. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, as always, the more we talk about it, the more interesting it sounds,
right? I was thinking, I feel so much smarter and more thoughtful about this after speaking to you guys.
Were there any other elements that you wanted to talk about with regard to the film, anything that it was doing?
I just like the creepy mask. Can I say that?
Yeah.
And that's, I guess that's a sort of slasher thing, even before Jason or Michael started wearing their masks. I mean, it's a really creepy mask. So kudos for that.
Mask. It's the little rain jacket too.
Yeah.
Which made me instantly think about
Don't Look Now.
Don't Look Now, which I guess was the inspiration. I'm not sure, but and what it is about rain jackets. Because you ever notice that, like, there's a list that's going to be coming to Horror Homeroom, all the rain jackets in horror. Because I'm telling
rain
you,
jackets of horror. Thing.
I know what you did last summer.
Yes, I got a list, man. I'm telling you.
Oh, I never even thought of I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody wears a rain jacket in Friday the 13th. Is it actually the killer or is it, I can't remember. I think it is. Mrs. Voorhees wears a rain jacket at the end.
Mm-hmm. And there's American Horror Story where he wears the big rain jacket when he has the hook. Anyway.
So I think it's probably because it evokes like butcher, like a butcher. That's part of it, maybe.
So any closing thoughts or have we exhausted this and run it into the ground?
I think that we haven't run it into the ground, but I think that we have left the viewers with really good questions.
That we would love you to answer and get back to us.
Absolutely. But I just think in closing, I like the film. I recommend it. Don't go in expecting CGI graphics and all kinds of like great stuff. But I think it was definitely worthwhile. And especially if you like things like taboo, religion, trauma, and terrible children.
And also that 70s CDs vibe. I mean, the very 70s feel to it.
Although I would say don't sleep on the kill sequences in this film because I think they're really, really good. So not only do you get the pervert killed in excellent fashion, which I think everybody enjoyed, but you also get the priest, and that is so shocking and so bloody and gory. And I was shocked by that moment when I first watched the film. But then there's also the stabbing of the aunt as she's going down the steps. And you don't see a lot of blood, but you see enough that, again, very giallo, that it conveys what's happening and creates this fun spectacle. So, you know, if you like blood, I think you'll enjoy this as well. True though what you said about like the parental neglect, you had me like rethinking that because I would leave the house at like 8 a.m. and I'd be home when I got like a literal whistle. I'd be like a dog. I swear to God. My grandfather would come home, he'd whistle, and I'm like, oh, it's dinner time.
Or it got dark, so you're like, okay, it's dark now, I have to go home.
My mom would be like, Gwen, get in the back of the Pinto before it bursts into flames. No seatbelts in this house.
While they're holding a cigarette and a beer in the car. Oh my God, it's a wonder we made it to this point, but it kind of explains a lot.
We did make it to this point because of that kind of parenting.
Maybe. So do we have any idea about what film we want to do next time? Or is it going to be another surprise?
It could be another surprise.
Well, we'll be back with something. We don't know what, but something good, I'm sure. In the meantime, you can find us all at Horror Homeroom on social media. And we will talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.